This is What's It Like with Dr. Ken Tangen.
Hi, this is Ken Tangen. This is episode 58 of What's It Like. My guest is Will Schreiner, who is probably best known as a comedian, actor, director, and anything else?
Oh, auctioneer, a male model.
Ooh.
Aviator.
Yes.
Scuba diver. Oh, I've got too many hobbies. Ken, it's a curse. You know, it's a curse to have. I'm a jack of all trades, master of none. And I work in five different fields so that I'm never out of work in all of them.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, it's good to have. You got to be flexible. It's all about reinventing, staying relevant in this day and age.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up all over. I was born in Manhattan. I grew up in Florida, Texas, Los Angeles, Indiana. Well, basically, we're on the run from federal authorities for a number of my years. So I went to 10 different schools before graduating high school.
Wow. Did you come from a large family?
I have a twin brother and a sister.
Oh.
I have a twin brother and a gibbon, who is my brother. A gibbon ape we raised. He was actually the most favorite of my parents' children because he didn't talk back.
So is your twin brother, was he born the same year?
Yeah, he was born very close in the same hospital. Yeah. It was all a coincidence. He was born 7 minutes earlier than I am. He claims they're the happiest 7 minutes of his life.
I just give you the straight lines and let you do what you want.
I just tee him up. Yeah, exactly.
When you were growing up, who had the largest influence on your life?
Well, it depends. What are you talking about when you say influence? You're saying the work career influence or, you know, guidance, you know, quality of growth? I would say my mother taught me to drink. My father inspired me to go into show business. The monkey taught me how to pick out head lice. And my brother, I learned nothing from.
I'm sure he has a different view of that.
Yeah. No, I think he'll agree.
What was your major challenge growing up?
Oh, my major challenge growing up? Well, moving around a lot. My dad was in show business. He was in television, radio, and so we moved around a lot, went to a lot of schools, but it was good. It makes you adaptive in nature because if you're always changing schools, you're always kind of the new kid, so you learn how to fit in and do all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I guess that's what made me want to be a comedian because in class, if you got laughs, you know, you were popular, you got the girls, and you also got the nuns to slap you around. So all three I looked forward to. And I think that's what got me into comedy was the movement.
What was school like for you? Were you a good student?
Yeah, absolutely. I was a straight A student, unless you're going to check facts. And then I was an average student.
Then you add your own stories, huh?
Yes, yeah. That's right. If this is all off the record. I was probably the head of my class, like magna cum laude or whatever you want to. But no, I went to UCLA Film School and I went to the University of Florida Television and Journalism Program School, and then I switched to UCLA and I went to a number of other colleges in the arts. One called Sherman Oaks Experimental College, which was taught solely by professionals in the industry. I took a screenwriting course with Rod Serling. I took a comedy course with Jonathan Winters, with George Carlin. I took editing with Johnny Alonzo, cinematography. You know, we had all these great people that would come in and teach. So I was like a sponge for a few years when I first moved to Los Angeles, and then that's where I learned all about show business. And then I got a job working for Dick Clark, and then the rest is history. I've been working in the business for 30 years.
Wow. Your dad, Herb Schreiner, was well known in the 50s for his humor.
He was a humorist from Indiana. He was kind of a folksy, Will Rogers-esque character, and he started in radio playing the harmonica, and then he started telling stories between songs, and then the stories got longer and the songs got shorter, and he had a TV show from 1950 to about 1958. One was called Two for the Money, which was a game show. He had a panel show. He had a variety show. And then he got out of television in the late 50s and kind of worked around the country. And we would travel around. He had bought Elvis Presley's old motorhome from Vernon Presley. And we traveled around doing shows all over the country. He would do fairs. And he had a pops orchestra that they toured with. And they would do an evening with kind of show. And I would wrangle the monkey. The monkey was in the show. And so I kind of stood off in the wings. The monkey and I both decided, hey, the show business is good.
It's sort of a vaudevillian upbringing.
Yes, it would be. I guess it would be a little of that. You know, the vaudevillians, you know, they basically, you know, honed a 10-minute act and did it forever from town to town. You know, later in my career, when you get on TV, you know, TV eats up your material. So having done The Tonight Show about 15 times, you know, you had to come up with a new 6 minutes every time you did it. So it was always new material, all new stuff. So it changed when I got into comedy when I was about 23 years old. At the Comedy Store in Los Angeles, and that's where stand-up comedy was. All in a way, it was very transient, because once the clubs started popping up all through the 80s, you could go around the country and headline these different clubs all around the country, and you know, live, you know, a life on the road. From Wednesday to Sunday, you were at a club, staying in a condo or a hotel somewhere. So, you know, it was a tough kind of, you know, like you say, vaudevillian life. I mean, it's still that for musicians. You know, anybody that's an entertainer, whether you're an actor or a musician or a comedian, you're on the road. You got to, as I explained to my kids, you know, that's how I get paid, by getting on an airplane to go somewhere.
Did you always want to be an actor?
No, I never wanted to be an actor. I still don't want to be an actor. And, you know, the great story was Victor Mature. I wanted to join LA Country Club, and they said, "I'm sorry, we don't let, you know, actors join." And he said, "I'm not an actor, and I've got 14 movies to prove it." And that's my story. I did have a co-starring role in Peggy Sue Got Married. I played opposite Joan Allen, the great Academy nominee Joan Allen. And I did a bunch of other movies for different people. I've probably done about a dozen or so movies. But I really don't – acting I found boring, waiting around to read your lines. I'm much more interested in directing and producing and writing than I am in acting. You know, occasionally I'll read for something just to remind me why I don't go out for auditions.
So what exactly do you do?
Well, it depends on the day, you know. Today, I was editing all morning a video about my auction company called Raise the Funny. We go in and we raise a lot of money for charities. In the last couple of years, I've probably raised over $4 million. And we come in and do it like a live auction, but we do it in a funny way, a very entertaining way. And we kind of get the audience both engaged and involved, where they feel part of the show and they don't tune out. So today I was editing a sample of an auction I just did last month in Pebble Beach for the Boys and Girls Club. So that was my day-to-day. I was sitting with my wife and we were editing. You know, on any given day, I might go flying, I might play golf, I might go scuba diving. Living in Florida, the options are endless. You look outside and you see what kind of day it is. I might get on my stand-up paddleboard and paddle around, and I swim a mile every other day. So, you know, that keeps me busy.
Yeah. You used to do a lot of directing for television and some films. Do you still do that?
I did a lot of sitcoms. I did Frasier and Becker and Raymond and My Wife and Kids and Two Girls and Louie and...
Many of my favorites.
Yeah, and most of those shows are all gone, and there's a lot of reality television on. So we're hoping that the sitcom comes back. I mean, we have a few new, what's called multi-camera sitcoms, which are like Frasier and Raymond, where we have Whitney and a few of these. So these new shows, in the beginning, they always get the guy that did the pilot. And, you know, then when the show's a hit and we have, you know, an opportunity, I'll go back and do some more of that, because I love working in television. It's like a play a week. You come in on Monday, you read the script, and on Friday you shoot it in front of a live audience, and then you're done and you start all over again. Mm-hmm. Unlike I did a movie called Hoot, which was based on a Carl Hiaasen book, best-selling kids book that Jimmy Buffett produced with me. And that, you know, that's a couple of years out of your life, whereas a television show, you know, is a week out of your life. So it's a little more lucrative. I mean, a movie lives on forever. I mean, it's great. This little film, you know, it's you can see it. Actually, as I was looking today, it was on YouTube. I don't know how they get away with putting it on YouTube. Because it had 33,000 views, and I didn't get paid for any of them. I wrote it, the screenplay, and I directed it and produced it. So that was a great undertaking. The movie's, you know, done, you know, tremendous DVD business. It's a family film, so it does better sort of in the DVD and pay-per-view than it did at the box office. So movies are fun, live performing is fun, but television is the most fun, because it's the most immediate, and it's, you know, it's over and done in a week.
What's the best thing about your job?
Oh, the best thing about my job is it's always different. I really love the variety. You know, you're never doing the same thing twice. I mean, I'm not an accountant doing tax returns. I'm not I'm not a mechanic working on a car. I mean, every day is a new set of challenges, a new different tasks, and a different adventure. So I think because I have a short attention span, I like the variety of things.
What's the worst thing about your job?
The worst thing about my job, sometimes just the worst part of my job is really looking for work, you know. I mean, and people, you know, I mean, I tell my son as an actor, and, you know, I said, that's the job, is looking for the job. Yep. When the best thing is doing the job. The worst thing's when it ends and you got to go look for another job. So if you get hired to do, you know, say you get hired to do a series or something, then, you know, then now you have a job. So the worst part of it, which is the looking, is over.
Mm-hmm.
The doing is fun, you know, the looking is over, but, you know, I mean, and you know, today in this day and age, you know, a lot of people are looking for work, and you have to kind of figure a way to market yourself differently. You know, it's very competitive. I mean, there's a lot less work in every field. So, you know, I think that's, you know, that's the challenge today.
What type of person would be good at your job?
Well, you have to be inventive and funny, and it helps to be well-informed, well-read. I mean, I think every comedian that I know is a pretty bright guy in general. To be a stand-up comedian, I think it requires, you know, an ability to think on your feet. You know, as a director, what makes a good director? Well, some directors are good with actors. Some directors are good with cameras. Some directors are good with comedy. Some directors are good with one out of three. Some directors are good with all three. I think to make a good director, it's really having a diverse skill set. I mean, I worked pretty much everybody's job on a set, so I could step into any position and do that job only because I know pretty much the elements of that task. So that makes a good director, having having been trained in all the different or not trained, but at least being aware of all the different jobs, because movie making and television, it's a collaborative effort. And, you know, as a director, you're basically the, you know, the head cheerleader. You've got to get all the collaboration to work. You've got to make it all come across, you know, the best way you can. In television, the writers are really the guys in charge. In movies, the directors are really the guys in charge. So the writers in TV and sitcoms, it's their show, the showrunner. They call that guy, you know, if it's say, for example, the guy on Two and a Half Men, Chuck Lorre, he's the showrunner. I mean, he calls the shots. When he and Charlie Sheen have this agreement, you know, it's his decision, mm-hmm. you know, what's going to happen. That's the best job in television, is being the creator, showrunner. And those are the guys that, you know, that own a big stake in the show and, you know, profit for many years after that. As directors, we just come in and our job is to take the script that they've written and, you know, and visualize it and put it on its feet and shoot it and then move on to the next one.
Jump between the four cameras.
That's right. Well, the four cameras are all rolling simultaneously, so you're doing sort of a play, but you're doing a little bit of a ballet where all four cameras are rolling, they're moving, they're changing positions, they're changing frame composition to get – you're trying to tell the story in four angles, and you generally do each scene twice. So essentially, you have eight angles or eight sizes of frames to tell the story. So if you have a close-up of one actor and a close-up of the other actor, you might have a two-shot and a big master of the other, and you're moving that around to kind of, you know, to kind of help tell the story, help convey the jokes, and you know, make the show work.
Does it take long to edit that kind of show?
Well, the directors, generally the editors take what you give them and they edit and they give you an editor's cut, and you sit down and you go, I'd like to see this different. I'd like to see that different. Let's put a close up in here. Let's go to the master here. You give them their notes. They take your notes. They implement them into the director's cut, and that cut goes then to the producers, and the producers can use all or none of it. Mm. You know, it's so that's the way it works in television. In film, you basically do your cut. And then you go and get a preview screening. So then you can show your version of the movie to a recruited audience, and then they fill out cards and they evaluate what they like and didn't like. And then the studio, after your preview, then they can come in and make changes and they can add things. And in our case, you know, they wanted to make the film a little clearer for younger people. So we dumbed it down a little bit for 5-year-olds when the film was really intended for 12-year-olds, mm-hmm. you know. But that's, you know, the studio's prerogative. It's their money, right. And they can do what they want. You know, so it's, you know, it's, you know, it, you're never – you're never really completely in charge, except when you're standing on the stage, because you are the producer, you're the performer, you're the editor, you're the director, you're the writer, you're everything. So it's the one time where you really have complete, you know, sort of autonomy over what you do, and the only gauge is whether the audience laughs or likes it, you know, and that's the fun part of live performing, is because it's never the same, it's different every night, and you know, you get to kind of adjust as need be.
How would one get a job like yours?
Basically, I think sleep with as many people as you can.
Indiscriminately.
Yeah, indiscriminately. and then figure out which ones can help you. I don't know. I mean, I started out to be a director, really. My dad gave me a little Super 8 movie camera when I was a kid, and we made home movies. Like a lot of filmmakers, we made Batman and Man from U.N.C.L.E. and, you know, and Magnificent Seven. And and when I became, of school age, I wanted to go to film school. And in film school, I studied with a lot of greats, and we studied a lot of film history and a lot of, you know. And then when I got out of, I left film school to go work on a movie called Ode to Billy Joe with Max Baer, and I worked for a year as a production assistant. But I got to work in every different department while I was on the movie, and that was part of my, I think I made $100 a week, and they paid for my hotel and food. But I learned all about filmmaking. I came back and finished up at UCLA, and you know, won some awards for some of my short films. And then out of film school, I had been showing my little films around in little art houses. And I one day stumbled into the Comedy Store, and I saw what the comics were doing. And I brought my comedy films into the Comedy Store, and I set up a projector and screen, and I showed these funny films in the clubs, and they would always go over well. And that's where I met David Letterman, who liked what I did. And David took me on the Tonight Show with him the first three times when he was a guest host. And then he went to New York in 1980 to host a morning show, a short-lived morning show. And he brought me on as a cast member and writer, performer and director. And I did a bunch of pieces for his morning show. And that kind of led to Bloopers and Practical Jokes, where I did more short films for them. And then I was... I had done a silly little film about my dog stealing my car and driving around the neighborhood, and a casting director named Fred Roos, a producer, had seen this film and wanted to get a copy of it, and brought me into a meeting, and he asked me if I was an actor, and I said I studied acting, and you know I knew how to act, but I was more interested in filmmaking. He said, "Well, come back and meet Francis Coppola." So he brought me back, and I met Francis. And I, you know, for me, it was like, "Hey, I'll come back and meet Francis, even if there's no part for me." And then he, I don't know, whatever, he saw something in me that he cast me in Peggy Sue. And then suddenly I'm working for 7 months on Peggy Sue, got married. And I came back from that, and then I did an Amazing Stories for Spielberg. And I thought I was on my way to being an actor. And then somebody, Alan Thicke, actually was going to do a talk show, and he got growing pains, and they were looking for a host for a talk show. So they came to me, and I had always admired Johnny Carson and David, and thought, well, what a great job. If I ever had the chance, I'd jump on it. So they developed a talk show that we did in a bunch of local markets, and they cut it together into a pilot, and they took it out in syndication, and we sold it in 110 cities, you know, 80% of the country, and syndication in 87. And next thing I know, I was a talk show host, and we did 200 hours of the show. And it was a lot of fun. It was very interesting and different. And it was during a writer's strike, so we were sort of working, you know, on our own, making stuff up as we went every day. And we were doing two and three shows a day, so it was a grueling schedule. And when Group W went through a lot of internal changes, we didn't get renewed for another year. So from there, I just went on and hosted a bunch of shows, and hosting and doing. I did a game show with kids. I did a game show with animals. I did a variety show with animals, and I did a show with inventors, and I just kept working and doing what I could. And as I was getting older, my manager, they have a thing called the breakdown services, where they look for actors. And he said, "You've made it," because they're looking for a Will Schreiner type. And I said, "Hey, well, you know, submit me. I think I'm right for it." And he said, "Well, they want a younger, cheaper Will Schreiner." So I realized that, you know, my days might be numbered in front of the camera. And I had gone to a TV thing at the TV Academy about directors, Jimmy Burrows, who's one of the great great directors that does all the big shows, and Jay Sandrich, who I knew through playing poker. So I went to see them be honored, and we, you know, and then when, on my way out in the elevator, I got in with Kelsey Grammer, who I knew from Florida, and Kelsey said, "Well, what are you doing here?" And I said, "Well, I'm thinking about directing television sitcoms." And he said, "Well, if you want to learn, you should come to Frasier." And he invited me to come to Frasier, and I was there like the next day, and I studied and observed, you know, for almost a year, watching all the different directors come through and watch how they different their styles and the different work and how, you know, how they made things funnier and how they helped the actors and how they, you know, knew when to back off. And a number of directors, Pam Fryman, who was one of the great directors working today, she took me under the wing and took me to other shows, and Andy Ackerman and a number of other directors, you know, took me around. And Jimmy Burrows, you know, had great advice about the process of directing. And then one day they said, we assume you're interested in directing Frasier. You've been hanging around long enough. I said, yeah. Matter of fact, I am interested. And they gave me one to direct in 2000, and it was a great episode. It was a really well written episode, and it was written by Jay Cogan, who is Arnie Cogan's son, who wrote all the Mad Magazine movie parodies. And Jay's a funny, he's a comedian and a writer, and he wrote this one about Dr. Mary. It was about Frasier replaces Roz goes away, and Kim Coles comes in to replace her, and she kind of takes over, and Kelsey can't get rid of her because she's black, and it's a whole, you know, it was a whole sort of, you know, he felt uncomfortable, and it won a bunch of awards. It won a Humanities Award and other things, and it was a great one. And from there, it just, doors started opening, and then I got to do Raymond, the season finale of Raymond that year, and Ladies' Man, and then the next year I did, you know, I did 3, and then the next year I did 7, the next year I did 12, the next year I did 17, and it just kept growing and growing. So there was a kind of a momentum in the sitcom, and then the movie opportunity came along. Jimmy Buffett had bought the rights to the book, and we were friends, and he said, you know, what do you think of this book? And I read it, and I said, oh, it'll be a good little movie. And I said, I'll go, how do we do that? And I said, well, the best way is to get a good script that you like and you can sell, and then, you know, you go out and make it. So I said, I'll write the script. I'll adapt the screenplay from the book if I can direct it. So he said, okay. And we did that, and we took it to a studio. The first place we went was to Walden Media, and we sold it on our first meeting. And then, you know, we left the meeting, and we were going, I think we went to Las Vegas because Jimmy was working up there. And when we landed, they called and said, yeah, you're making a movie. So we were all ecstatic. And then, you know, of course, the first thing Walden wanted to do was get rid of me and bring in another writer and another director. But Jimmy and Frank Marshall, our producer, you know, they stood by me and said, no, this is the guy that wrote this, and this is the guy we're going with. So it gave me that opportunity. You know, they were loyal, and, you know, we made a pretty good little movie. It got messed with a lot by the studio, and you know, it came out, and it didn't set the box office records, you know, that some of these movies can do. But, you know, when you're a little family film and you're up against, our first week we were up against Mission Impossible and then The Da Vinci Code and then Poseidon Adventure, you know, we had a tough competition. But you know, the movie lives on, and it you know, I still, it's in my Google alerts, and, you know, it still plays in libraries and schools, and kids come up all the time, and it's a beautifully shot film. We had a great director of photography who's a lifetime award winner, Michael Chapman, who had shot Jaws and shot The Godfather and shot all kinds of movies as a camera operator, and was just this great, great sort of mentor for my first film. And Michael had directed, and he was a DP on so many movies, Raging Bull. I mean, his credentials, he was about, I don't know, almost 70 when we hired him. And the studio kept going, why would you hire an old guy? You know, like, oh, because I'm hiring a guy who's got a tremendous amount of experience. And he was a tremendous asset to have on the movie. And we became good friends, and we still stay in touch. And, you know, so it was fun. I had a great, great year shooting the movie. And I've written another one called Flush, which is about another one of Carl Hiaasen's kids' books. And we're out looking for funding. You know, these books, you know, they sell a million copies, and then you think, well, there's a million people that probably want to see the movie. So we, you know, we just kind of, you know, you try to independently finance the next one. Mm-hmm. So you have a little more control over it. But in the meantime, you know, I'm enjoying life. I'm in my 50s. I like to have a good time and work. It's a kind of a blend of both.
Do you like being famous?
I would say I was more famous in the 80s and 90s when I was in front of the camera. So having tasted that, you know, with fame comes, you know, a lot of people, you know, wanting to talk to you and wanting to bother you and sit down while you're eating and buy you a drink and, you know, and all that stuff. So it has its good and its bad points. I mean, I don't mind not being famous anymore, having tasted it, because you have sort of an anonymity when you're, I don't look the same as I did when I was on TV.
You sort of get your life back, huh?
Yeah, so now I can go back into strip clubs and things like that, but without, you know, without signing autographs. But no, it definitely has its rewards and it definitely has its hassles. And anybody will tell you that. I mean, you know, my brother was a daytime soap opera actor. He was 30 years as Scotty Baldwin on General Hospital. And, you know, he still looks good and still looks the same. And, you know, people come up all the time and, you know, want to chit chat. It's, you know, it's great when you want that, but it's also a pain when you don't want that. Mm-hmm. So it's fame is, you know, a lot of people today want to be famous for nothing, you know, like the Kardashians, like Paris Hilton, you know, they really have no skill. You know, Snooki doesn't do anything. The situation doesn't, they don't have any, they're not a talent. They're just a personality. And people, you know, people look at that and go, oh, I want to be like that. I want to be able to get free stuff. But I think, you know, fame is something that should come to those that earn it and deserve it, not just because you're on TV.
Will Schreiner will tell you what you should do with your life right after I remind you of the importance of health. Let me introduce you to a disorder that impacts a lot of people. In the UK, it's called ME, myalgic encephalopathy. In the US, it's called CFITS, chronic fatigue and immune dysfunction syndrome. Whatever you call it, this is a horrible disease. My daughter has had this for over 12 years. It's a chronic neurological disease of unknown cause and no known cure. Almost every body system is impacted, the heart, the immune system, the central nervous system. So you have problems with vision and balance. My daughter can't sit up for any length of time. She can sit up long enough to get into her electric wheelchair so that she can drive from her hospital bed to the bathroom and back. This disease screws up life. It has totally disabled her. And for patients who do get better, it's often a relapsing, remitting disease. Although it can occur at any age, it's most commonly found in women like my daughter in their 20s and 30s. Clearly, this disorder needs more research. So go to cfids.org and click on the donate button. cfids.org. Thanks so much. So, Will, everybody has to give themselves motivation occasionally. How do you give yourself a kick in the pants?
It's true. I mean, you have to... I do go into my slumps where I don't feel like doing anything, but then, my motivation is I still got a lot of responsibility. I got a kid in college. I got a kid out of college with no career, but a BA in theater, which is, you know, basically, you know, entitles him to park cars. just responsibilities, you know, you have to keep working, you know, you have to keep, you know, pushing yourself. One thing I admired about Jimmy Buffett was every year he would take on some new challenge, you know, whether it was learning how to snowboard or speak immersive French or whatever he would do. He was a guy who challenged himself every year to grow and do something different. And I think from what I understand, if you're always challenging yourself, whether it's learning a new software program or learning how to, you know, speak another language or learning how to, you know, to do something that you already do better. You know, I mean, I have a piano. I sit down and regret not staying with my piano lessons when I was a kid. I have a lot of regrets. As you get older, you kind of realize how little time you got left to do everything you ultimately wanted to do. When you're young, you can kind of set your sights on anything. But as you get older, you know, you realize, well, if I'm going to learn to play the piano, jazz piano, I better get on it, you know.
Let me turn the question around. When you have to soothe yourself, how do you calm yourself down?
Alcohol.
Ask a comedian a question.
That's right. I tell you, you know, a martini is like a woman's breast. One's not enough and three's too many. My favorite quote from a movie. But I go and swim. I mean, I find it, I actually, when I swim, I put on some headsets. I have some waterproof headsets that I can listen to music or books on tape, and I swim for an hour. And I find it extremely therapeutic to just kind of zone out. And in a way, I come out of the pool every day with like new ideas on how to fix something I'm working on, how to begin something. I mean, or I come up with an idea for a joke. The challenge is remembering it, you know, from pool to home.
Yes.
But I have about eight projects on my computer that are in various levels of completion. So I do get scattered, which is difficult, you know, and when I listen to some of these motivational tapes and things like that, you know, they tell you, you know, you got to pick so many hours to work on each item a day if you're going to do that. I mean, this week was, I'm going to finish this auction video, and that was the focus of this week. Mm-hmm. You know, now it's Friday. I just actually finished it a little while, about an hour ago. So I'm just looking at it, and I'll post it up on my site in a couple hours. But at least, you know, I got it done. I can check that off. I mean, I'm a big to-do list guy, and I have, you know, I have to do now, to do soon, to do eventually, to do one day. I got a lot of categories, but they're all good things, you know, in the to-do list.
Is there an event in your life that has challenged you to the core?
Well, making the movie was a big challenge. You know, I do a lot of corporate work. I go and MC and I do these auctions, and I moderate conventions, and I do all kinds of things. So they're all challenges. You know, you all have to prepare and go in. There's been no event that, you know, I wasn't able to dive in and, you know, and get out unscathed. I mean, some go better than others. You know, some, you know when you hit a home run. Some, you know, where you just like, well, if the double was all that was going to get out of that show. In terms of writing, I don't think you ever finish writing. I mean, I just keep rewriting and rewriting. I'm working on a play right now, and I've been working on it for 2 years. It involves my son and I, and, you know, he's like, when are you going to finish that, Dad? And I go, hey, you know, I got to do something else to pay the rent right now, you know. So I just finished a project for the city of Fort Lauderdale, the Centennial. I did a series of videos for the celebration of the Centennial, and we project them on buildings all over the city to sort of show how the city's changed over the last 100 years. And it was a concept I came up with, and then they were like, well, who's going to do it? And I go, I don't know. Yeah, who's going to do it? And they go, why don't you do it? You know, oh, God. So I ended up taking it on, and it turned out really nicely, and they were all happy. So, you know, you look, here we are, what is this, coming into October, you know, I'm going to go to L.A. and shake the trees and try to get on some sitcoms while I'm out there, some of the shows that look like they're going to get picked up. And, you know, and we got this other movie that I keep giving to people to see if they want to put up $8 million and make it. So if, you know, any of your listeners have $8 million, they're not, you know, they don't know what to do with. So it's all good. You know, I want to get my commercial. I have a multi-instrument license. So I want to get my commercial rating. You know, I'd like to get better on the piano. I'd like to spend more time in the Bahamas. Either have time and no money, or money and no time. So it's, you know, it depends. When I had money and time, that's sort of where I came off the movie. I had a little bit of money, a little bit of time. So I kind of enjoyed, the time off, and, you know, you could just get up in the morning and say, hey, I think I'll go play golf today, or, hey, mm-hmm. I'll read this book, or maybe I'll do this. But, you know, it's nice to not have to get up and go to a job you hate every day. I mean, I tell people all the time, if you want to do something, you know, do something you love, and then it won't feel like work.
Being rich and famous doesn't shield you from the tragedies of life.
No. I mean, you know, my mom and dad both died in an auto accident when I was 16 years old. So I've been on my own, making my own decisions ever since, you know. So it's, you know, I'm not one that has avoided tragedy. I mean,
yeah. Is there an idea or a principle that has helped you through all those issues?
No, my son just lost a friend, and he was asking me how I deal with it. I think, you know, time is a little bit of a healer of any kind of loss and any kind of pain. But I just kind of like, you know, I don't dwell on it. You know, it is what it is, and you got to move on and get back on the horse, as they say.
If you were giving a commencement address for high school or college, what would be your best advice? What would you say?
I would say, if your parents are paying for it, get your master's. If your parents aren't paying for it, then get out there and do something you love, and find something you love, and be creative and challenge yourself. Think outside the box. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of kids are coming out of school with no direction these days. And I think, you know, while you're in school, it's the ultimate place. I mean, my daughter's in school, and it's like this is your next couple of years. You have, you know, you can study anything you want. You know, take some business classes, take some, you know, history classes, take some, you know, English, take a variety of everything and figure it out, you know, because you don't have to do what you set out to do when you're 17 or 18. You can change your mind. I mean, I'm living proof of that. I changed my mind from being a director to being a comedian to being an actor to being a television host to being a director again to being a playwright to being a movie director. You know, I just keep bouncing in and out of jobs because it's, you know, it's you know, you got to go where the work is.
I want to thank Will Schreiner for joining me today. Thanks, Will. I appreciate it.
I really had no choice in the matter, did I?
I think you actually said yes.
Oh, did I? Oh, that was one of my people said yes.
Yeah, that people being you.
Right.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate your time.
All right, Ken. Nice talking to you. Good luck with your project.